Today, on Rainbow Country, the Artist's Way series continues with composer Igor Verbak. My exit interviews from Big Brother Canada continues as well. This week, it's the triple eviction that happened. And music from LGBT recording artists from around the world. Stay tuned for Gay Talk Radio Toronto Style, right here on Rainbow Country.
Hi, I'm Mayor John Tory, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
No matter who you are, no matter what you do, everyone has a story to tell. And right here on this LGBT show is where it all starts. We lift our voices, share our stories, and we'll raise our pride. After all, we've come a long way since 1969 and the Stonewall riots, to the legalization of same-sex marriage, to the recognition of trans equality. I'm Mark Tara. Join me on this journey through Rainbow Country. CIUT 89.5 FM. This is Rainbow Country, the station's gay radio show, giving voice to the LGBT community. And I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country. I'm Mark Tara. A little bit about me. I am an LGBT content creator. I'm also a recording artist. Get social, get interactive on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Mark Tara Music. Want to send me an email? Want to be a guest on the show? You have an idea, a suggestion for me? Maybe you're a recording artist. You want me to feature your music? Mark at marktara.com. The podcast for Rainbow Country is on iTunes as well as on podomatic.com. And again, everything is hooked up through my website, marktara.com. marktara.com. So, this is CIUT's Spring Membership Drive, and this is my Spring Membership Drive episode. So, I hope you will consider making a donation to the station. Head over to CIUT.fm. Just so that you know, in 2017, CIUT is celebrating 30 years on the FM dial, and that's all thanks to you. The Inside Out LGBT Film Festival is running here in Toronto from May 25 to June 4th. For more information, go to insideout.ca. So, this is episode 47. On this episode, my Big Brother Canada 5 exit interviews continue. Today, it's the triple eviction that happened. We'll hear from Jackie, William, and Dre. Plus, my spotlight on the Artist's Way series continues. Today, musician and composer Igor Verbak. Now, Igor has an independent record company called Akashic Records, and they're having a new artist showcase on Wednesday, May 17th at the Opera House here in Toronto, 735 Queen Street East. The event starts at 8 p.m. For tickets, go to ticketfly.com. And as usual, we'll hear music from LGBT recording artists from around the world. So my friends, This journey through Rainbow Country begins right now with Big Brother Canada.
This is City Councillor Kristen Wong Tam, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
First walk into the Big Brother Canada house and you realize, Jackie, that you're going to be playing with newbies and returning players. When you first realized this, what went through your mind, Jackie?
I was very, very, very nervous. Beforehand, I tried to do as much research as I could, and I did hear rumors that, you know, it could potentially be an all-star season, but knowing that I was going, I was like, nah, it's not going to happen. But as soon as I saw Aiko walk in the door at first, I was like, wow, we're going to get the opportunity to play either with or against some of the greatest Big Brother Canada players. And honestly, it was just awesome to see them walk through that door.
So, Jackie, you tended to play your Big Brother Canada game. You tended to play your game alone. Was that by choice, Jackie?
No, it was not by choice. I definitely tried to build my relationships, but unfortunately, the people that I built my closest relationships with would leave the house as soon as I felt a bond growing. So for me, at the end of the day, I ended up having to kind of figure out who I thought I could work with best this next week, and it never worked out to my advantage.
So let's talk about some of your favorite memories in the Big Brother Canada house. What was one of the toughest memories that you have of the Big Brother Canada house, Jackie? What one of the hardest times that you went through?
The hardest times would definitely be alone in the house. Just kind of knowing that I have people back home that have my back, and wow, I'm here in this environment where, you know, it doesn't feel like people want to be around me, and that people like don't really care about me, and it's an awful feeling to just feel so alone. But at the end of the day, I went into this game thinking that I was going to need people to get me through this game, but I'm looking back and I'm thinking, wow, I was able to do this alone. I was able to do it by myself. I didn't need anyone to get me as far as I did in this game, and I'm very proud of the way I played.
Favorite memory from the Big Brother Canada house?
My favorite memory would be on day 42 when we got our participation party. Just being able to see my family, my sisters, my dog on that screen was an unbelievable feeling. I was very low at that point in the game, and just seeing that I have people who have my back at home, it brought my confidence back up. My self-esteem just rose through the roof at that point, and the fireworks were just there to top it off. It was an amazing evening.
So, Jackie, my last question for you. Who would you like to see win Big Brother Canada 5?
I would love to see Dre win Big Brother Canada 5. Her and I definitely had ups and downs through this entire experience, but at the end of the day, she was there for me. She was someone that tried to help me through rough patches and to try to help me further in my own game, even though, you know, it could have potentially wrecked her game. I feel like she's very strategic, and I really respect her as a woman and as a game player.
Well, Jackie, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Dre, William, mm-hmm. you both played a season of Big Brother Canada with veterans and newbies. Dre, what was that like for you?
It was the thing that I did not want to happen
as I got into the house. That's what, like, the first thing that I did not want was to play with returning players, and that happened. It was definitely exciting but stressful at the same time, and I did feel in the beginning at a bit of a disadvantage. It was definitely fun but stressful.
And William, same question to you. What was that like playing with both veterans and newbies?
I would say, like, when I saw them, I was like, only the fans, seeing my favorite house guest of the four past seasons. So that was kind of, I was really intimidated by them. Like, I was a huge fan of Cassandra. So seeing Cassandra, seeing Kevin, that I really like on season three, seeing Gary, who's such a big character, like, that was, like, kind of intimidating. And I think that was hard to start the game because I was scared of them. So.
So, Dre, this question is for yourself.
Yes.
You decided to vote out Aika pretty much after hearing about a Final Four deal with Kevin, William, Dimitri, and Aika. And you heard that news from William himself. Why was that news so upsetting to you that you'd want to vote out Aika, Dre? Yeah. Why was that so upsetting?
I do want to clarify a little bit. The Final Four was not the thing that kind of, like, set me off, because I think Aika was on the block. She needed to do what she needed to do to get off the block, which it's fine. What upset me a little bit more, and that I want to clarify, is the fact that William told me that she came to him and said she wouldn't vote Kevin out. So apart from the Final Four, she wouldn't vote Kevin or him out, or she wouldn't put them on the block, but I would. So Aika told William Dre would go after Kevin. And I just felt like she basically threw me under the bus in order for her to stay, and I just didn't think that she would do that. And that's the part that really alarmed me, and that's why I wanted to get her out. Well, I mean, I was going back and forth, but that's the moment that I was like, she's doing it again, and yeah, it was just, yeah.
So, William, for yourself, yeah. When you realized that Dre wanted to vote Aika out,
What
went through your mind?
To be honest, I was so scared, because I knew that Aika would be really, really pissed. She would know that I tell Dre. And I was scared. I was like, okay, now she's gonna be pissed. She will, like, stop this deal that, like, we've done, like, one day before only. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna be in huge troubles right now. So yeah, and that was really scary.
Everyone was scared. Like, everyone wanted to vote Aika out, but everyone was very scared.
Yeah.
And I feel like my decision to vote her out was not, or to keep her, was not out of fear, but generally because I thought I could work with her, and I decided to, like, try again and trust her, whereas everyone else was just very scared of Aika. So they're definitely, I feel like they're led by fear for sure in the house right now.
So this question, last question for both of you, who would you like to see win Big Brother Canada 5? Andre, I'll let you go first.
I would definitely like a new player to win, in all honesty. So at this point, I mean, because Dylan flip-flopped and kind of, like, busted my game, I hope that he wins. At least I hope, like, he's not out, because I'm a bit bitter. So I would say Dylan, but honestly, yeah, a new player. I don't really care for anyone that's left, so.
Honestly, I would say, like, the newbies that are left, I don't really like their game. So honestly, I don't think I would pick from them. I would go, like, maybe from Kevin. Well, for sure, Kevin, I want him to win. I would normally have my vote. And, like, to be honest, I can't feel she played a good game. Like, her and Dimitri are both together in the top five, and I feel that it's quite impressive. Like, there's quite some luck in this, but I feel that at the end of the day, she played a really good game. So, Kevin, Aika. So.
Well, guys, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And welcome back. You're listening to CIUT's gay radio show, Rainbow Country, and I'm your host, Mark Tara, and that was my exit interview from Big Brother Canada 5. Don't forget, you can see Big Brother Canada on Mondays and Wednesdays at 9 p.m. and Thursdays at 8 p.m., which is the eviction episode, and you can see that all on Global TV. And apparently, Gray's a little bitter. Dre is a little bitter. I don't blame her. Don't forget, CIUT's spring membership drive is on. Head over to CIUT to make a donation in support of CIUT, in support of Rainbow Country, in support of Gay Talk Radio. And again, like I mentioned earlier, in 2017, CIUT is celebrating 30 years on the FM dial. When I return, the Artist's Way series continues with musician and composer Igor Verbeck.
Hi, I'm Lorraine Segato, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
A composer, an arranger, a music producer. He's also an ally of the LGBT community. He is Igor Verbeck. Did I say your last name right?
Absolutely. Verbeck.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark. Great to be here.
I have to ask you, what's going on with you right now? What's going on in the world of Igor right now?
Well, I'm a film composer. And currently working on a movie score, actually just about to start. The movie is called 22 Chaser, produced by Don Carmody and a few other folks around the Don Carmody Productions. He is the producer of many, many movies, about 160, 70 films.
Wow.
And he brings... apparently more revenue into Canadian box office than any other Canadian producer.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a good contact to know.
So this is a second film that my music partner, Ken Worth, who is right. also a composer, arranger, music producer. So he and I are scoring this film together.
So that's what you guys are working on now.
Yeah. We are music partners and we score movies, TV shows,
right.
Commercials here and there. Mm-hmm. And we have a record label.
So my question to you, Igor, is when did you discover your love for music? When did that happen for you?
It's quite actually specific. I can tell you the exact... I have a brother. His name is Sasha. Mm-hmm. He lives in Stuttgart, and he's an opera...
Is that Germany?
Yep, in Schwabia. Swabia, that's the, you know, Mercedes, Hugo Boss, Porsche there in Stuttgart. So it's a lovely city. He lives there and he sings for the National State Opera House. And he's a bass. So he's 10 years older than me. So by the time I was 5, he was already playing Chopin, Rachmaninoff, Mozart on the piano. He
right.
actually studied the piano all the way up to post-secondary and beyond. And then he actually only started professionally singing at age 31. So I was exposed to it at an early age. And I got into piano and side singing the conservatory system, much like the Russian. You know, you start very young and you go, and it's quite intense and on top of your regular public school. And this was back in Serbia, which was part of the former Yugoslavia, right? In the 70s and 80s. And so by the time I would say by the time I was 13, I knew I'd be a musician for life.
Right.
And by the time I was 17, I knew I'd be a composer. And then by the time I was 24, which was here in Canada, it narrowed down to knowing that I would be a film composer.
Okay.
Because I learned at U of T, which is the school I continued my studies at. I studied classical composition with Gary Kulesza, who was the composer in residence with the TSO at the time. And he once told me, you can't be a film composer and a composer.
Okay.
As in discrediting, which he later laughed about and said, what? Did I say that? But anyhow, so... But I also learned that classical composers, at the time, there was not a single one that was solely making a living by writing concert music.
Right.
So I figured out, hey, what about film and TV? And there's a lot of that.
Right.
So who does that? So I went up to a gentleman named Glenn Morley, who had 3 Gemini Awards at the time. This is now in the late 90s, circa 2000, when I was just finishing U of T.
Right.
And, you know, and I asked him, how does one become a film composer? And he said, well, start writing for short films, post your name in schools and stuff,
right.
And you'll be doing it for very little money at first, or no money, and then for little money, and then eventually, hopefully, for more money.
So when did you move from the former Yugoslavia to Canada? That happened when, in 93?
Mm-hmm.
And so why did you guys choose to come to Canada?
Well, it was just me on my own. So in 1991, I started university in Novi Sad, Serbia, classical composition at the Academy of Arts, and which was a prestigious school, very tough to get in. And thanks to my brother's help, I got in.
Mm-hmm.
He was really good at training my ears, you know, and inner ear and stuff, dictation and all of that. So I got in, but then that's when the war started, and that's when Yugoslavia fell apart, right? So out of the 6 states, they started to separate one by one, right? Because they can by the referendum, by constitutionally, right? In a confederation or a federation, any state can separate if they so choose.
Right.
So, but it didn't go over well with Croatia and Bosnia, and then the whole thing went to crap, you know. Serbia then got under the embargo. By 93, things were horrendous in Serbia, just in terms of a lack of opportunity. It was a good place if you want to be a criminal or a, you know, war criminal or a, you know, weapon dealer, human trafficker, organ trafficker, a thief. Great. It's where you want to be, man. But if you wanted to be a composer, you needed to get the hell out of there. And so that's what I did. So in 1993, I didn't have a passport. By that time, I could not renew it because of bureaucratic blah, 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 and I had not served the army by this point, which was mandatory at the time in most European countries. So by this time, I certainly wasn't going to sign up for that.
Right.
And all that Milosevic stuff. I mean, I wrote graffiti against Milosevic back in 1988 before any of this happened.
Wow.
When people were still believing in him like they are now believing in Donald Trump, right? This whole euphoria about a president. All the blue-collar people, you know, had his picture up. Bus drivers, truck drivers had his picture up on, like, windshields and stuff. And much, this is very kind of interesting, the Donald Trump euphoria. It reminds me of that. And then we saw what Milosevic became. Like most revolutionaries, so-called, turn out to be dictators. But back to then, so I decided to just leave. So I literally walked through a cornfield illegally into Hungary.
Wow.
On July 16, 1993. I was 22 years old, and I had hair down to my ass. I was a rocker. And I had a backpack and no passport and 10 Deutschmarks in my pocket. And so I lived on the streets of Budapest, public shelters, church for a week even, back and forth between the street and public shelters, even jail one night as an illegal immigrant, whatever. So exactly 4 months later, on November 16th, I was sponsored by the Canadian government as a refugee, just like these Syrians now.
Right.
CR1 was on my IM1000 document, which stood for Conventional Refugee 1, which is the most endangered kind of refugee. And so I got my landed immigrant the day I landed at Pearson. So, yeah, 4 months later, exactly.
So, Igor, we were just talking about your growing up, your journey. And you had a particular song that you wanted to share with us. What's that song?
So I think this song would be good to summarize my background. I wrote it. It's a composition. It's called Lazar's Issues. It was done for one of the first short films that I did back in 2000. And it's a quartet written for a bass clarinet played by Peter Stoll, who is a Toronto guy, U of T guy. Bass by Darius Nargrawala. Accordion by Dusan Paunovic. And violin by Bogdan Djukic. So it's a quartet, and it kind of encompasses some of my Balkan roots, Serbian roots. And but at the same time, it's a milonga, influenced by an Argentinian composer, tango composer. A milonga is a slow type of tango. So it's got a bit of a tango thing influenced by Piazzolla, but it really kind of also shows that. And it's a very somber piece, so I think it kind of marries well my new Canadian moods at the time that were going on, but also drawing from my roots.
Well, let's have a listen.
Let's do it.
We'll be right back. So, Igor, you have a musical partner that you work with, Ken Wirth. And you guys started that in, what, 2010?
Circa, yeah.
Okay. How did you guys meet? How did that partnership come about?
We met through a mutual friend named Billy Mintz, filmmaker, who is now with a National Geographic Explorer program. He's one of their story editors who travels around the world and makes up and assembles those stories that are featured on the show. And you know, he's been an independent filmmaker his whole life, very talented guy. And I was his go-to guy for music, sound, everything for about almost a decade, 9 years, I remember. and then he moved to LA in 2011, maybe. But just before, well, in 2007, so a few years prior to that, Ken Wirth came back from a four-year sabbatical, traveling around the world and sailing and stuff, because he had done well in the past, scoring John Woo's TV series, Once a Thief, Peter Benchley's Amazon back in the 90s, and he's done big commercials back then, in the days of the big budgets. And then, you know, he just took a sabbatical. He had some a minor health issue, which thankfully went away, and it was all good. And he came back, and he ran into Bill and Mintz at a party and said, "Hey, I'm looking for a new music partner." Mm-hmm. Billy said, "Hey, meet my guy, my composer, right. Igor." So Billy calls me and says, "Hey, I'm here with Ken Wirth. He's legit. He's a good composer.
Right.
He's older than you. He's, you know, he's a more senior guy, very experienced. I've worked with him." And the next day, Ken came over, and you know, a few years later, so we slowly, you know, got closer and closer. He's a great guy. His background is rock and roll. He's a collector of guitars, instruments, right? So he's got some gems. And he's a really big expert on the analog, anything analog, mm-hmm. guitar amps, sounds, if you want, the Cure sound guitar, or like the Edge, or Jimmy Page, or whoever you want. He knows exactly how it's done, what okay. amp, what ear, what make. So, and he, you know, he was the founding member of a band called Clear in the late 70s, which later became FM. Nash the Slash.
Okay, yeah.
And they were produced by Jack Richardson. I want to say Sir Jack Richardson. and he was actually the father of what was known at the time as the Toronto Sound. Mm. People came to, that was in the 70s during the Yorkville era.
Right,
60s
yeah.
and 70s when Neil Young was starting. Mm-hmm. The Rush used to sit in Ken's band's rehearsals. And artists like John Lennon and Peter Gabriel would come to Toronto to get some of that Toronto sound mm-hmm. to record with Jack Richardson.
Sure.
They used to borrow, Peter Gabriel used to borrow their snare drum because he liked the sound of it.
Really?
So, yeah, that was the era. And even today, when you receive a Juno Award in the producer category, mm-hmm. It's called the Jack Richardson Juno Award. And I used to be on the I was an adjudicator on that panel mm-hmm. in 2012. It was one of those honors that you pay. Both Ken and I were actually at one point judges on that.
For the Junos.
The Junos, yes. Yeah. It was at the time Stephen Cranwell, a gentleman, was the CEO of Karras, mm-hmm. who ran the Junos, right? So he used to work for ECM label in Germany, who put out Pat Metheny and all these great jazz fusion records in the 70s and 80s. People that jazz labels in the States would not sign up, and Europeans would welcome them over there. So ECM was a legendary label. And so he used to work for them, and I worked with some people that were released under that. So that was our connection.
Now, you and Ken Wirth, you guys work together. You guys do films, TV commercials, music productions. Do you have a favorite type of thing to work on?
Yeah, we did a horror movie, and then right after the horror movie, we did a comedy, a Hollywood-Bollywood-style comedy called Dr. Cabby, produced by the Virmanis. Virmani family, so mm-hmm. AJ Virmani, and starring Kunal Nayar, Raj from Big Bang Theory, and Adrian Palicki from G.I. Joe Retaliation, the female lead. So she was the female lead in Dr. Cabby. So we went from like a horror zombie, horrendously like terrifying mm-hmm. movie that was actually both zombie and horror at the same time.
Now those producers, are they the ones that worked on like Resident Evil and yes. Silent Hill, that sort of thing?
Yes. Well, actually, one of the producers is Roger Christian.
Okay.
He's a good friend of ours. Mm-hmm. He's the man who designed R2-D2.
Really?
And the lightsaber.
Really?
And he won the Oscar for the original Star Wars. He was set decorator on
that. Have you ever seen his Oscar?
No, I haven't seen it. But he was in our studio every other day during the movie. It was called 13 Eerie. Don Carmody was also a producer on that.
Okay.
It was directed by a rookie director at the time, a young guy, Lowell Dean from Saskatchewan. Mm. It was a co-production between Ontario and Saskatchewan.
Okay.
At the time, there was tax credits and incentives for that. So that was, you know, it starred also Michael Shanks, Catherine Isabel, Brendan Fair. It was actually a really good little movie, and we enjoyed working on it.
And what was it called again?
A 13 Eerie. So number 13, numeric.
An eerie.
Eerie as in eerie. Spooky eerie, right? And it was really like, if you're into horror and into zombies, you won't be disappointed, because most zombie movies, when we went and did research, they aren't actually scary. They're either just mass killings of zombies or whatever. Yeah. So this was really like hand-in-hand combat, as in like he's standing around the corner. So they played with a lot of that Steven Spielberg, Hitchcock-type suspense that would really scare, or David Lynch. So it because it was Roger Christian was really mentoring this rookie director, and so we, like, he was really telling us what to do. And what was most wonderful about it was that he actually pushed us to be wilder than we originally would dare to. Because we were thinking, here we are working with the Star Wars guy who sat there with John Williams recording the London Symphony on the original Star Wars. Right? And
how did that make you feel? The fact that you're sitting there and right next to you is this legend. At the time, I'm sure you were like, okay, I need to work, I need to do this, that, and the other. You're in the moment working. But thinking back now, what comes to mind?
It was actually, you know, circle comes full kind of feeling. Because it was actually Star Wars. When I was a kid, I was like, what, 8? When I first saw, I remember I first saw The Empire Strikes Back. And it was the first time that it occurred to me, who does this? There's a lot of music there, and it's awesome. And it's like, that would be a cool job. The first time you... So that seed was planted in my head by this movie. And here I am now, 30, 40 years later, sitting in the room and with Roger Christian, and he's telling us stories. And he directed second unit on Return of the Jedi and Phantom Menace.
And that's fantastic.
He was also a production designer on Ridley Scott's Alien with an Oscar nomination.
Wow.
So the spaceship, all of that
stuff. Yeah, yeah.
And I was sitting there, and he was telling us stories, and I wasn't even blinking. And at one point, I look at my partner, Ken, and he's laughing from the other side of the room.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's up? And he goes, I've never seen you this quiet for so long.
Wow.
Because I was just like, you know, absorbing all this.
Yeah. Well, on that note, Igor, let's take another break, and we'll be right back.
All right.
You guys have a record company called Akashic Records. Is that correct?
Correct.
Now, I'm interested by the name Akashic Records. Give me the history on Akashic Records, especially with the name.
So I said to Ken, let's get a name that's bigger than Universal.
Because you guys have distribution through Universal.
And we do. And he said... Now we do, but I can't remember which came first. But I said something paramount, something big, you know, that encompasses all of the universe or something, or even more than the universe. And he said, well, let's say Akasha, which is a Sanskrit word, Akasha, for ether or heavens or, you know, the space-time medium itself, if you will. And ancient philosophy, they believed that all of the everything that's ever happened in the universe is recorded in this. It leaves an imprint. And quantum physics actually tells us that it's true now, right? That in the space-time fabric itself, everything that's ever happened is actually recorded. And then we sell records, so it's so what, obviously a play on words.
What type of artist do you guys represent?
So it's not genre-specific.
Okay.
And the way it happened was this deal with Universal. Mm-hmm. So both Ken and I, aside from being film composers over decades, have been working as independent music producers. Mm-hmm. So both he and I produced many records for artists across many genres.
Right.
I've studied some jazz at U of T, so Ken's background is more rock and roll, whereas mine is classical, but we do overlap.
Right.
And we do a lot of world music too. And
so you've got what, hip-hop? Do you have like pop? R&B, that
yeah,
sort of stuff?
We have, I can name a few. There is an upcoming showcase. You can check Akashic Records on Facebook, Records with a K, for the dates. But there's going to be a showcase called Akashic Records Review, mm-hmm. where we are going to review our talent pool that we've been producing over the last year.
So what's your, are you on Twitter, Facebook, that sort of stuff? What are your, some of your social media handles?
So right now, in terms of social media, yes, we have Facebook, Ken and Igor Music. Ken, it's easy to remember. Think Ken and Barbie. So replace Barbie with Igor. Ken and Igor Music. And that's our film stuff. And
right.
So we like to think of Akashic Records as a division of Ken and Igor Music.
Right.
And that's what we actually say. So that's sort of an offshoot that happened. So mm-hmm. we're still film composers. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as music producers, why not? And what's also wonderful is that we end up co-writing with all these artists.
Right.
And help them find the sound. Some are more developed than others. And mm-hmm. we're part of that, their development and exploration of their sound.
So KenandIgor.com. Check it out. Igor, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Mark. Lovely to be here.
Anywhere, anytime, I'll be right here by your side. Take a step, take a breath, cause tonight's gonna be the night. Every day, every night, every moment of my life, all my love goes to you from the bottom of my heart. Oh, won't you be my love tonight? Yeah, you're everything and more than a woman to me.
True love,
that's what I've been searching for.
Welcome back. You're listening to CIUT's gay radio show, Rainbow Country. And I'm your host, Mark Tara. So that was my spotlight on my ongoing series about the artist's way, featuring on this episode musician and composer Igor Verbak. Don't forget, Igor's record company, Akashic Records, is having their new artist showcase on Wednesday, May 17th at the Opera House here in Toronto. That's 735 Queen Street East. The event starts at 8 p.m. For tickets, go to ticketfly.com. And CIUT's Spring Membership Drive is on. Head over to CIUT.fm to make a donation to the station. And like I've been mentioning, in 2017, CIUT is celebrating 30 years on the FM dial. And that's all thanks to you. I think it's time we have some music. What do you say? Let's feature Tessa, an LGBT recording artist, a lesbian recording artist, who's with Igor Verbakht's record company, Akashic Records.
Hi, I'm Mayor John Torrey, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
Oh,
And welcome back. You're listening to CIUT's gay radio show, Rainbow Country, and I'm your host, Mark Tara. That, we just heard two songs from LGBT recording artist Tessa. We heard that track, Bad Blood, and starting off that set, Dopamine. Get social, get interactive on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook at Mark Tara Music. My email, pretty simple, mark@marktara.com. The podcast for Rainbow Country is on iTunes as well as on podomatic.com. And again, everything is hooked up at my website, marktara.com. Next week, Carol Pope. I'll be rebroadcasting my latest interview that I did with her a few weeks back. That's coming up next week. Finally, I want to take this time to thank you for taking your time to be with me. Remember, we live in days of making dreams come true. So believe in yourself, and the world will believe in you. Taking us out? It'll be a surprise.
Hello, Toronto. It's party time, and I'm Julie Lee.
I'm DJ Dallas.
You're listening to CIUT
89.5 FM.
Giant step for you and all mankind. Then don't come back. Take a look around and tell me what you find. Shut the door. Take a giant step for you and all mankind. Then don't come back. I always gave you so much more than you deserve. Now don't come back, 'cause no one makes a fool of me. You've got a nerve to walk away. Mark the words I'm gonna say. Mister, you just made a big mistake.
Missed.